Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The World According to Dragons, Book 3, by Harmon Cooper, narrated by Wayne Mitchell. Chapter 1. One Last Trap. Seonzus, the middling city known as a winter and summer escape for the Four Kingdoms' richest, was quiet. Too quiet. It was late in the night now, the streets well-lit with the soft, distant glow of lanterns expertly made by the dwarves of the Tribute Islands. Even with the light, there were still plenty of shadows perfect for thieves and cutthroats, perhaps even Senjay warriors to call home. But Twilla wasn't expecting Jetch's worst at the moment, not after what had happened a few hours ago on the outskirts of Ekanth. And what a battle it had been! Twilo forced to do a fight with Jetcha, who had taken the body of an elven orc named Rowian and now carried a pulsing red and black sword. Had it not been for Adventus and Seonzus, the two dragons he was able to summon, Twilo would have likely died, or worse, Jetcha would have enslaved him somehow. Yet he had made it. He had survived. Princess Ambala, who was with him now, had also played her part, and she had played it well. The Crown Ravana of Isenor had proven to Twilo just how surprising her power was, and how much she had learned in the years of his absence. She could fight, she could use arcane cards, and she knew a thing or two about dragon essence. Twilo only hoped it wasn't a Pyrrhic victory. Being defeated by a mortal had likely stirred a fire in Jetcha. One that could only be quelched by the carnage he was famous for. He might not have had the ability to easily resurrect more dragons now that Twilo had killed the Magi that was pulling them from the realm of the Forgotten, but Jetcha was still alive. He was still active, and the only way for Twilo to beat him would be to band with those brave enough to stare down the god of carnage himself and to get stronger. Not an easy task for the shunned Saracent from an Isenordian city known as Sparrow's Rise, a relic hunter who had taken on this task after soul-binding with a dragon on his deathbed. But Twilo was up for the challenge. Now he was able to use dragon essence. He had access to a dragon essence system. The more ways he could utilize the system, his relics, his arcane cards, and his combat knowledge, the better his chances. But how many more would he have to lose along the way? There had been Olaf, Vradin's partner, and to find out that Renda, the elven orc who had raised him to fight, had joined Jetcha, was certainly a knife in the back. But hopefully she was dead now. Twilo had seen her burn himself. And if he could get out of this war with the god of carnage with just two deaths, Twilo would be incredibly lucky. The companions that he planned to meet in a few days were on the forefront of his mind now. Vradin the monk, Annalie the elven orc, and Katashi the kitsune. They were the people that mattered. Alongside Princess Embla, Twilo wanted to make sure they survived all of this when the day came. Not only did he have to do this for the Four Kingdoms, the people who would either prosper or suffer during the coming rebirth of dragons, he had to do it for them. He also had to do it for his own legacy, even if it was something that he would never want to gain notoriety from. Regardless of who he was, Twilo's father had betrayed the Ravana of Isenor, who just so happened to be Princess Embla's father. This was a form of redemption for him, a way to make things right. He was at the point now that he lived for his destiny. He just needed to reach the end. And then, if everything worked out in his favor, Twilo could disappear again. Back to the life of a relic hunter.
"Are you sure about this?"
Princess Embla asked. The princess braided her long white hair with its unique blonde streaks at the back of her head, revealing more of her face, her long neck and elegant features. She was a far cry from Twilo with his tattoos and piercings, yet they did have one thing in common in the way that their eyes gleamed. Isnordians could see in the dark, but their eyes, like an animal, often gave them away.
Well, Che Eros?
Embla asked him, her eyes flashing yellow.
Are you sure about this, or do you think we should wait?
Twilla let out a short breath. I think we will be fine. There's no way he could have gotten word to the city this quickly.
We don't know that, and it isn't Jecha that I'm worried about.
If not Jecha, who could she possibly be worried about?
Seonzus asked, the red dragon's voice now in Twillo's head. Adventus was there too, yet he was quiet at the moment.
She wants to know what you're worried about, Twillo told the princess.
Romulus. He may have had something set up to happen if he died. It was a couple days ago. Word could have reached here by then, especially if someone used the Emperor's messengers.
You mean Romulus could be leading me to a trap?
Your final confrontation with him wasn't exactly pleasant, was it?
Twilla remembered Romulus's confession, how he had been the one who had ratted out his father. The giant of a man had tried to kill Twilla in their last encounter, and Twilla had acted. On his deathbed, Romulus had told Twilla of a stash of arcane cards at his home. That was the plan at the moment. Get the arcane cards and then continue south, where they were supposed to meet the others in the western desert city of Nalik.
We will be careful, he assured her. Extra careful.
They had just left the Stave Church, where they were able to recharge their powers via its vortex, and not a moment too soon. By the time they arrived, Twilla was quite low on reserves. It took a moment to look at his status as he considered their options for re-entering Romulus's oldest estate.
Her name, Che Ero Shotarovos, Tier Apprentice, Rank S, Class Martial Arts Mastery, Rank C, Secondary Class None, Tertiary Class None, Dragon Essence, 325 out of 325, Arcane Cards, Arms of Viking Wood, Level 1, Core Eruption, Level 2, Eternal Cycle, Level 2, Fire Breath, Level 1, Flash of Fatal Morgana, Level 2, Nadakunai's Might, Level 1, Rippletide, Level 2, Vard's Blessing, Level 1.
Twilla was only able to have 3 cards on deck at any given moment, which meant that it would take a moment to rearrange. He did so, now with Fire Breath, Core Eruption, and Flash of Fata Morgana at his disposal, on deck, as it was known. His current lineup gave him a way to fight someone, a way to charge an object if need be, and a way to confuse opponents, if it came to that. The rest of the cards went back into the box that he kept them in.
I'm ready, he told Princess Embla. Let's keep to the shadows.
They reached the back of Romulus's grand estate to find that the lights were on.
It seems like someone is home,
Seonza said as Twilo pondered how this could be.
It could just be a precaution, Adventus told her.
Perhaps. Or this could be a trap of sorts. How about summoning us, Relic Hunter, and we can simply burn the entire place down? That is an option here, is it not?
He needs the cards. We aren't here to torch every place we visit. Stop acting like such a dragon.
I don't even know how to respond to that,
Seonzus told Adventus.
What are they saying?
The princess asked Twilo. She had been around long enough now to recognize when the dragons were communicating in his head, which could be quite the distraction.
They think it's a trap. Or one of them does. She is suggesting we burn it down. I don't think that's a great idea either.
You three really don't appreciate the power of a good fire,
the red dragon said.
Let's go to the same door that I went in when I surprised you there,
Embla said.
It's this way.
Twilla remembered how she had seemingly appeared in Romulus's home, how surprised he had been. Princess Embla had been guided by Livia, same as Twilo. In this way, their destinies were intertwined.
That could work.
You were surprised when I appeared, were you not?
She asked playfully. Not in the least bit, your regalness. Let's do this. Twillo and the princess circled around to the side of the enormous estate, where they reached an ivy-covered wall made of stone. The pair floated up over the wall and landed on the other side. They crouched near neatly arranged box hedges. Once they were sure no one was watching, they followed a gravel path through a garden, one with vibrant flower beds and the melodious sound of water trickling out of a fountain made of marble. Princess Embla stopped and inhaled the fragrance wafting off a rose garden. She locked eyes with Twillo, shrugged, and continued on. The two reached a lily pond that had a wooden footbridge crossing its still waters. Twillo shook his head, which sounds as noticed through her next comment.
All this opulence! And for what? I suppose one could say it is an honor to me, considering the name of the city. Perhaps I should look at it like that.
Twillo gestured to a gargoyle-like dragon statue that was short and stout.
Dedicated to you, I'm guessing?
You're lucky I don't torch you for that. That is not supposed to be me,
Seonsus told him.
Absolutely not. You've seen my face. Do I look like a bloated dragon who has spent the majority of her life barbecuing wolven creepops?
Twillo didn't answer. They reached the side door where Ambla quickly picked the lock, as if she had spent years of her life as a thief. When she got it open, she drew her dragon essence power dagger and stepped in. Twillo followed close behind her, his hand on the hilt of his father's blade. They paused at the end of a narrow hallway, the lanterns ahead all glowing. Ambla shook her head, her ears flitting back slightly.
Something seems off.
It shouldn't, Twillo said. It really shouldn't.
Summon one of us and we can go ahead, Seonsus told Twillo. It is safer that way.
She wants to come here.
Would your dragons even fit in this hallway?
Ambla asked as she gauged the distance between the floor and the ceiling. She shook her head.
It's best if we just do this quickly, and then we can find a place to rest. I don't know about you, but I could use some.
There will be plenty of places for us to relax for a spell, I assure you. We just need to get these cards first.
They will probably be in the study.
It's a good place to start. Lead the way, Twillo told Isenor's crown Ravenna. Over the last several days, he had grown used to her being around, yet it still struck them as fortuitous that they had grown up together and had somehow united. And it was always fun to tease her a bit about her status. She moved ahead quickly, Ambla light on her feet. Twillo floated after her and caught up to her once they reached a tapestry depicting the River Vaska, which flowed from the great woods of Midling out to the East Midling Sea. It was a fine piece, one that showcased the river's white shores reminiscent of the snow of Twillo's home kingdom.
Admiring the art, are we?
Seonsus asked.
Always pleasant to fly over that river, Adventus said.
I wonder what will happen to all this stuff, Twillo told the princess. Some of these tapestries are priceless, which tells me he might have stolen them.
I really do not know. Come on.
Twillo kept to the side of the hallway. They came around the corner, the relic hunter now recognizing the area. He had come from the opposite direction last time, Twillo certain of it. They reached the study and stepped down into the lower space.
Foot, foot! A pair of throwing knives zipped through the air. One of the knives grazed right past Twillo's shoulder. Had he been just an inch or so to his left, it would have done some serious damage.
Careful, left-handed one, Adventus said.
Twillo drew his sword and moved straight into action against a pair of warriors dressed in all black, their faces concealed. He knew what they were, and he knew how much they would have trained to be where they were. A guild of assassins out of the Tribute Islands. The Brethren were considered some of the fiercest warriors across the four kingdoms. Twillo didn't know why they were in Romulus's estate, but he knew now wasn't the time to ask questions. He swung his sword. One of the brethren assassins met him using a gauntleted blade. Twillo's sword clinked off the strange weapon. He activated his flash of Fata Morgana power, which had his opponent turned around in a matter of seconds. The assassin was still fighting ferociously, yet he couldn't find Twillo as he cut through the air with his two-bladed gauntlets to stave off the sudden hallucination. Meanwhile, Princess Embla had already dragged her opponent to the ground, her legs wrapped around his body as she jabbed him in the chest with her dagger. Seeing this took Twillo off guard. He had no idea how she had gotten the man into that position so quickly. It was certainly a testament to her skill. With his opponent still dazed, Twillo quickly slashed him down with his sword. He stepped over him and delivered the death strike. Princess Embla's eyes shone hard.
When there's two...
Several more brethren assassins stepped into the room, these ones armed with swords with angled protrusions jutting off their blades.
Let me handle it,
Seonzis said. Sure, Twillo gladly summoned the red dragon. She appeared in the room in her magnificent red scale armor, her hands on the hilt of a giant sword. Rivets of gold accented the deep red of her hardened exterior, culminating in a helmet that completely covered her face and revealed a pair of glowing blue eyes. Much to their credit, the brethren didn't flee. They hardly flinched. The assassins came at Seonzis, leaping over furniture and spinning into action. Yet her speed, fierceness, and the sheer size of her sword gave her an instant advantage. The first assassin to reach her lost his head. The second woman got close enough to Seonzis' armor to get a strike in, yet was quickly cut down. Seonzis ducked under the next attempt, swiveled, and hacked the man down. She finally drove her sword through the last assassin's chest just as he was lunging for her. By the time she was done, the room was filled with dead or dying brethren. Twillo could almost taste the blood in the air, and he didn't like it.
This one is still alive.
Seonzis nudged the man she had stabbed in the torso with her foot. She brought her sword under his chin and lifted it.
Who sent you?
The man, who was coughing up blood until she placed a sword under his throat, glared at her. He gritted his teeth, the enamel covered in red.
They won't speak to you, Twillo said. Most take vows of silence.
Then he is no use to me.
Seonzis kicked him away.
Shall we get what we came for?
Adventus asked Twillo, the white dragon's voice surprisingly calm in such a visual of suffering.
I was thinking the same thing. He turned to Princess Embla. Where do you think they are?
If we split up and search, we will be able to find them. We're looking for cards. They will probably be in something similar to what you carry yours in,
she said, referring to the box that the Magi and Ikant had given Twillo.
I'll search as well,
Seonzis said as she walked over to one of the shelves. She began knocking some of the books out of it. She then tilted it over entirely, the shelf crashing to the ground.
With finesse,
Embla told her with all the command of a crown ravener. Twillo was surprised to hear her take that tone with Seonzis, yet the red dragon warrior heeded her warning. While she searched in the study with Princess Embla, Twillo explored the rest of the mansion. He reached Romulus's room on the second floor, where he found a large, circular bed that was made in a way that it appeared as if it were floating off the ground. The walls were covered in elaborate sexual paintings of fleshy women spooling over one another, buried in bosoms and flowers, and lustier than some of the work Twillo had seen in pleasure houses.
You were a fool, Romulus,
Twillo said as his eyes dropped to a protrusion on one of the pieces, something just slightly out of place. And the casual observer might not have seen it, but to Twillo, a relic hunter, a man who had spent the majority of his life looking for treasure, it was obvious. He approached the painting and placed his hand on the protrusion, discovering that it was a small handle. Twisting the handle allowed Twillo to open a portion of the painting to reveal a safe. Now, the only thing standing between him and the arcane cards was the lock. Twillo tapped his Ankylo ring of animation against the lock, which caused the lock to come alive. The piece clicked to the right and fell to the ground, where it writhed for a moment before settling. Twillo opened the safe to find a purse full of platinum coins, as well as promissory notes. At the back, stored in a small card box, were a trio of arcane cards. The first one was exactly what Twillo had been looking for, a way to store all the cards without having to manually place them in his chest. He would have to get some guidance on how to actually use it, but he had a feeling Princess Embla would know more.
Codex Vault. Legendary Heart Card. Level 1. Codex Vault is a passive card that allows you to store an unlimited number of arcane cards.
The card featured a woman wearing bright purple robes as she spun a handful of arcane cards in front of her body. The next card seemed equally helpful.
Warding Glyph, Ultra Rare Sword Card, Level 1. Using this card, you can inscribe a glyph on any surface. Anything passing by it will trigger an explosion of dragon essence.
The Warding Glyph card had a hand on it, similar to his core eruption card. Rather than depict an image of the hand charging a stone, Warding Glyph showed a hand charging a brick wall. He could imagine a number of ways to use the third card as well, which featured the image of three mages pointing at one another as if they couldn't figure out which one was the doppelganger.
Enchanting Deception, Legendary Shield Card, Level 1. If legend is to be believed, the Enchanting Deception card was first created during the War of Ambrose to create a mirage of an entire army. Use it to enchant your efforts to confuse your foes.
Twillo took the cards and the platinum coins, but left the promissory notes. He met Embla and Seonzus downstairs.
Well?
The princess asked.
A good haul. One card in particular, I want to get your opinion on it.
He showed her the Codex Vault card.
This is the one I was telling you about. Another way to store arcane cards rather than keep them in a physical container. Put it in your chest. It will stay there and act passively.
She smiled at the relic hunter.
You really are lucky, you know that.
So I've been told, Twillo said as he placed the Codex Vault card in his chest.
He then sent all of his other cards in, doing so with no issue.
And then I just invoke which one I want to use?
That's right. One of the brethren I studied under back in Eisnor had one of these cards.
I didn't think that they used these kinds of powers.
They do. They're from the Tribute Islands, which are known for artifices. And while Magi are the ones who have been generating these cards since the time of Yanzon the Undisputable, they were known to craft them as well. After all, an arcane card is simply a piece of parchment that has had a dragon essence code inscribed into it. Think of them as instant spells, and the number you can use as spell slots.
Should we check them for cards? Twillo asked the princess as he turned to the dead brethren.
I already did. Nothing.
Seonzus faked a yawn.
Are we going to sit around here and hear a full explanation, or are we leaving? It's a rather grim scene, even if the assassins had it coming.
Agreed. Let's go to the Otto Mountains, Twillo told her. It's time to recoup before we find the others down south. And who knows,
he said as he extended his grin from Seonzus to Princess Embla.
Maybe we'll find a relic or three along the way.
Chapter 2 Discovery. Twillo and Princess Embla touched down in the Otto Mountains just as the sun was starting to come up. Adventus had found a clearing, one large enough for the dragons to perch. It just so happened to have an old hermitage near it as well.
By Livia, I'd say this is almost as good as a summer home in Sorzol,
Twillo told the princess, his hands on his hips as he admired the hermitage. Meanwhile, Seonzus playfully bickered with the white dragon behind him, the two snapping at each other.
You're serious?
Princess Embla asked, her face a mask of skepticism. The hermitage was built into the side of the rock, the wood packed tight with a mortar that looked almost fibrous. It was an unusual way to create a building like this, but Twillo had seen these constructions before, especially closer to the border of Southfall.
It will do for the day, he told the princess as she joined him.
Unless you want to head back to town. Twillo jiggled the coin purse he had taken from Romulus's mansion. We could stay in a pretty nice place with this amount, Your Grace. For a long time, even. We could probably even buy a place.
Looking to settle down, J. Eros?
Things will catch up with me at some point if I don't. Twillo pried the hermitage door open. He looked inside to find that the space was completely protected from the elements. The hint of ancient sage that lingered actually made the place smell pretty good.
Look at that. Perfect for someone of your status, he said as he motioned Embla inside. Perfect.
Fanny.
She sat, and Twillo took a place next to her. He felt a pulse of dragon essence as the dragons returned to him. And they're back.
I could go hunting for you all, Seonsis
offered Twillo as he got comfortable. Twillo pulled his bag around and went through some of the things.
We have some food, he said, referring to some of the stuff they had taken from the stave church in Seonsis,
which consisted of day-old bread and a kind of yak butter they made in the western cities of Southfall. Twillo got the bread out and used a small knife he carried to butter it. He took his first bite and swallowed it down. The bread wasn't great, but it would do.
None for me?
Princess Embla asked.
I assumed you wouldn't want any. It isn't exactly fine dining.
Fine dining? You assumed wrong.
Twillo buttered some bread and gave it to her with just a little flair. She laughed. They ate a bit more and prepared to sleep, the two Isonordians sleeping back to back for additional warmth. There wasn't much time for Twillo to think about all the things that happened in the last 24 hours. He was out in a flash, exhaustion pulling him to sleep quickly. He awoke hours later, his mouth dry. A spur of panic came to him as he sat up. For a moment, Twillo didn't know where he was. But then he remembered that they had found an old hermitage in the Otto Mountains, that as far as he knew, the two were safe for now and everything was going to plan. They just needed to reach the southern city of Nalig and wait to meet the others. Twillo stepped out into the clearing and took a deep breath in, observing the mountains beyond. Their location was certainly high up, to the point that he couldn't see the ground, only a thick gray mist. The setting sun cast blue and purple slivers across the mist. The visual, one that Twillo wouldn't soon forget.
Finally you awaken, Seonsis
said in his head, which halfway brought Twillo out of his peaceful morning reverie.
He yawned. Care to take a look around?
I thought you would never ask.
Seonsis took shape, the red dragon smoothing her wings back as she settled before him. She tilted her head up and let out a small puff of fire, one that formed a perfect orb before disintegrating.
Let's fly.
Twillo mounted up, and soon the two were gliding around the mountain and over the crest of another. Seonsis came in close enough to bring her wing through the snow. She spun a few times, Twillo hunkering down as the cool wind blasted against his face. They were just finishing a full circle when he noticed something on one of the peaks.
Closer to that,
he said as he pointed to what looked like the spires of some ancient building. It was hard to tell this high up in the mountains, but there were similarities. He was fairly certain the structure was man-made.
What do you think it is, left-handed one? Adventus asked, his voice still audible, even though Twillo was currently whisking through the air on the back of the red dragon.
Seonsis veered right, used the tip of her wing to take out some icicles, and returned to the structure.
If it is what I think it is, then we are in luck,
Twillo told Adventus as they grew closer. There wasn't much space for Seonsis to land, so Twillo hopped off her instead and floated down in the snow. He bent forward, his body pressed against the rock as she disappeared. The wind roared past, twisting around the peak of the mountain, banshee-like. It brought with it snow flurries. Twillo forced to clench his eyes shut for a moment as the wind finally settled. At a distance, the two objects he was looking at resembled crumbled bits of stone. Yet it soon became clear that they were statues, remnants of the guardians that once protected the sanctum beyond. Twillo's eyes traced over a door carved into a rock. The coloration of the stone was...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?